All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Derek Jackson. I'm a writer with the Union of Concerned Scientists, and probably most important for this particular panel, I was a Shorenstein Fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government 2 years ago, where my project, or penance, depending on your point of view, was to write about the national media's failure to cover the Flint water crisis. And as an example of just one paragraph to give you an idea of why we put this panel together, one paragraph is, by coming late to Flint, the national media utterly failed to capture and depict all of the agency and self-empowerment of the populace to speak for themselves. Newspapers and networks missed the many months of people showing up at City Hall and meetings to complain about the water and the rashes and the illnesses, or the eagerness to participate in the citizen testing organized by Virginia Tech and others. In a city 57% African American, 37% white, and 40% poor, the media missed a story of citizen action that cut across racial and class lines to complain about and campaign against the use of Flint water. And so to address this, one of the reasons the Society of Environmental Journalists came to Flint was hopefully to learn lessons as to what went wrong with the national coverage of Flint, what can be done better in the future, and most importantly, how do journalists bridge from the areas where we were raised to be neutral and objective to being able to accurately and fairly communicate the passion and all the things that residents, I'll just say human beings, go through. And for this, we've assembled a pretty cool panel of voices that represent voices that tried to make the voices of Flint heard, and some that were unheard. We have Kurt Guyette from the Michigan American Civil Liberties Union, who did award-winning work covering the Flint water crisis at the local level. Ron Fonger, an award-winning journalist here with the MLive-Flint Journal, also won awards for his work doing the local daily coverage. Cynthia Lindsay, an attorney for class action suit of Flint. Jolena Freeman, a resident of Flint who I gotten to meet over the last few days, a name that if you look up the national media, you probably haven't heard, but has amazing things to talk about. Nakima Wakes, another Flint resident who I'm meeting for the first time and has a lot to say. Another voice from Flint who you probably have heard of, Melissa Mays, who is in several national stories in Flint, and Dr. Lawrence Reynolds, a pediatrician who was every much in the trenches as other people, taking nothing away from them, but who was in the trenches as much as anybody else who was maybe perhaps better known. So we have many voices here. No way we can cover everything in 1 hour, but we'll try to get at least a little bit of a flavor of what you thought, what the national media could have done better in Flint. And so we'll go across the table. So take like 2 minutes just to say whatever's on your mind about what you thought, if you were a journalist, what you tried to do, and what you thought was amazingly not picked up, and residents, whatever you wanted to say about what you think was accurately or inaccurately covered. Just want to say tonight, a couple of housekeeping things here at the conference. We have tonight Larry McRae, is doing a blues concert here right in the ballroom next door at 7 p.m. with dinner, a full dinner, and that is that dinner is open for free for Flint residents. So come on back at 7 o'clock and enjoy dinner and a concert on the Society of Environmental Journalists. We do have a lunch right after this. Unfortunately, that lunch is full, so we'd like to, instead of being able to invite you for lunch, we want to invite you to come back for dinner and some music. Okay, with that, I think we'll just, for expediency, we'll start with you, Kurt.
Would you mind starting with the residents? I'd like to hear what they have to say before.
Sure. I have no problem with that.
Thanks.
Jelena, you want to go first?
Sure. So, hi, everybody. My name is Jelena Freeman. I'm a Flint resident here, lifelong Flint resident. I'm a mom. I have three children. We have all been here to experience the still ongoing current water crisis. Some of the things that I think that were missed were definitely the voices of the residents. I think that we get kind of drowned out by more professional type people who come out and speak. And they are really kind of focused on moving Flint forward, you know, like Governor Snyder said, for us to just get over it. I really think that a lot of people who are running our city are feeling the same way. I think they need to not be doing that. We need to focus on Flint current, not future. Well, future, but, you know, we're still in the water crisis. We still can't drink the water. And you know, they're trying to say that we weren't poisoned. They're trying to say that we were only exposed, and I don't feel that that's accurate. Every day we're putting ourselves at risk when we wash our hands, when we take showers, when we take baths, when we cook our food, we have to use bottled water. If we don't, we're going to get sick. You know, it's like playing Russian roulette. You don't know what you're going to get. So, you know, I just really want people to focus on bringing the light back to Flint so that we can get help here. I mean, we just need clean water. We need new infrastructure. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Nakia Wakes. I'm a Flint resident, and I agree with Jelena. The news coverage, they came and they went, and it's like some people were calling like, well, I thought Flint was all right, and it has been over 1,600 days, and we are still on bottled water here in Flint, which is ridiculous. We did not do this to ourselves, and it's like we have to fix it. It is very unjust what has been done to us. Just to be briefly, me and my kids, this has had a major impact on me and my family. I was pregnant twice with twins and lost both of my babies due to drinking this water. Both of my kids have high levels of lead, and everybody is like, well, what is it going to take to trust? I don't know what it's going to take to trust, because we've lost trust. It's been so many years. They've lied to us so long, and how can we trust someone? And it has been over 1,600 days, and we are still on bottled water. We have to use bottled water for everything. So I don't know what it's going to take for me to regain the trust, but I know we still need to get the coverage out. We're out here. We're not the ones who poison us. And as Jelena said, now they're trying to say we weren't poisoned, we were exposed. It was poison. I lost not two, but four babies due to drinking this contaminated water. Also, I think that they need to get coverage out. It's not only lead that we need to be worried about. There's other heavy metals and contaminants in our water. And also, everyone is like, well, didn't you get your pipe removed? It's removed from the streets. What about the rest of the pipes, my water heater, all of that in the house where the Legionella and everything else could build up in the water heater and still move through the pipes? So the coverage, we still need media coverage, and we need people to keep coming back and keep us in the news so people don't be like, well, your water's been taken and I thought everything was fine. Everyone wants to know what can they do, and it's like the bottled water is just a Band-Aid. We don't need no more bottled water. Yes, the bottled water helps us because we have to deal with the bottled water every day, but we need this getting taken care of. It has been over 1,600 days, and we should not still be on bottled water. Thank you.
So obviously I agree with Jolena and Nakia, and in case you haven't picked up yet, because we were ignored for so long, we had to become our own water experts, plumbing experts, and our own source of media. Nobody was listening to us. If they did write a little blurb about us, they made us look like we were crazy, like we were making it up. And it took even past when pediatricians came out and said, yes, the blood lead levels corroborate that, you know, the children have been poisoned. They only focused on the children because, yes, that's important, but lives have been lost. People have died because of this water, because what was done to us. And yet we see things in the media saying, well, such and such city has higher levels of lead than Flint. First of all, that's extremely rude. That is absolutely horrible because we are not in a competition for the world's worst water. That is ridiculous, and that's shame on the people that write that. Second of all, that's also not true. I travel all over the country to talk to other cities, and not one city has a lead level of in their tap water that's 22,900 parts per billion, like one of our neighbors. What the reporters are going off of is what the state's saying, the very people that poisoned us. So why would you trust those numbers? We obviously don't. Nobody is listening to that still. It took, for the world to pay attention, it took us to fight to replace our mayor, who then declared a state of an emergency, and then the world was like, oh, there must be a problem there. But exactly what JoJo and Nakia said, they don't listen to the residents. Had the residents been listened to, the Flint water crisis would have been exposed at least a year earlier, when we were all showing up, talking about our water tests, showing our rashes, showing our bottled water, talking about the people who have died. But we weren't listened to. We were made to look like we were crazy, complaining. We just wanted something for free. And yeah, it's funny, because we're paying the highest rates in the United States for water that we cannot safely use. To this day, and Nakia is right, today is day 1,625. Think about that. 1,625 days of having to find alternative sources of water, having to pay for the bottled water, having to drive or wait in line for hours just to get 4 cases of water. So I actually encourage the media, if you want to cover it, right, live with a Flint resident. Actually stay with us for a week. Actually see what we have to do to survive. And then be amazed at how strong we are about the fact that all of the changes have come about because of the people. The people that have been ignored, the people that aren't listened to this day. The media parachuted in, and that's great. We needed you. It helped push change. But then as soon as Trump announced that he was running for president, everybody left. Everybody left. So then the world thought, well, the media's gone. Everything must be fine. And it's not. Not even close. And still, when it's covered, it's a little tiny blurb, and you talk to an expert or somebody who doesn't even live in Flint, and then it's a downplay. Oh, well, it's getting better. They're recovering. Pipes are getting removed. But Nakia's right. Interior plumbing. Jolena, we need water heaters. We need medical care. I don't have health insurance. Neither does my husband. We have people that are suffering, people that are dying, but still getting out there every day fighting. And that work is not being covered, and it should, because it needs to be an example for every other city that's now going through this. Because of the fact that Flint's been swept under the rug, so are these other cities. And this is something that needs to be stopped. We need the media to stand with us to force accountability, because perhaps had everybody not left, then maybe we'd be further along in the recovery process, because the pressure is now off of the decision makers. So that's where we're at. I mean, we appreciate the coverage because we're over here dying and fighting for our lives and fighting for our friends and neighbors. Some of us are being silenced by being sued for speaking out. Me. And some of us are fighting for our very lives. And I think that's something that needs to be covered because, yes, human beings are resilient and we are fighters. But this shouldn't be happening to us at all. Thank you.
Kurt and Ron, what were you able to feel like you were successful at getting across at the local angle? But what was not picked up nationally?
I think a big part of it was alluded to in the New York Times mea culpa was what I witnessed was that the national media seems to have a very difficult time handling a narrative that doesn't have one or two clearly defined heroes, and they focus on these people that they describe as heroes. And, you know, a lot of people that have been singled out are absolutely deserving of all the recognition and accolades they get because they were key pieces in the equation that helped expose this. But the continual driving force in all this was a coalition of residents that came together. And it was diverse. It was, you know, racially diverse, very diverse. And I think there were a lot of people that were never at the same table together, came together because they were forced to through this crisis. And they worked together really effectively against long odds to eventually bring the crisis to the attention of the world. And that gets missed an awful lot. It's just, oh, these people saved the city. And it was the residents that saved themselves. And that's the really inspiring aspect of the story, and the most inspiring aspect of the story, and that gets lost, and that's unfortunate because it would help inspire other people to know that we don't have to count on someone to save us. We can save ourselves.
Go ahead. I would just say there were a couple of things about the water crisis that made this not ideal for the national media to cover. One was the nature of the problem. The contamination of the water was not, and you can see this if you go back and look at the results of the testing of the water. We didn't immediately go to point X, okay? We did not reach the pinnacle of the worsening of the water all at once. We went from having no lead in the water to having 4 parts per billion to having 6 to having 11. It was a gradual thing. Now, some of the stuff, especially the complaints about color and odor, were the first things that put it on the map. But when you're talking about that, and we really didn't have a handle on exactly what it was that we were dealing with, that doesn't tend to attract a national audience. Okay. The other thing was you really, I think, have to look at kind of the messed up system of government that was going on at the time. As everybody knows, Flint was being run by an emergency state manager at the time. The state was complicit in making decisions that led to the problems. They had an interest in not promoting the problems, and there were other opportunities that were totally lost. City government, county government, state government, federal government, there was complicity all the way around, and it seemed like nobody wanted responsibility for it. Nobody wanted to step up and address what was happening, and everyone had an interest in protecting themselves. So those are just a couple of things that stood out to me. It wasn't a story that all of a sudden we woke up the next day and we had this massive water contamination problem. It took a long time to unfold, and therefore I think it took a long time for it to be recognized.
You know, it wasn't just people not willing to step up and admit that they had created a problem under this radical emergency manager law. They actively covered up what was going on. They rigged the test and then provided false assurances to the people that the water was safe using results from tests that were rigged. That's what happened here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, well, my name is Cynthia Lindsay. I'm one of the attorneys that's handling the class action lawsuit, well, a proposed class action lawsuit. I'm from Detroit, Michigan, so I don't live in this area. A lot of the news coverage I had or I got early on about this was, you know, I see a little bit of trickle down in Detroit, but it wasn't a very popular subject down there. There wasn't a lot of news media. And in fact, I had actually retired from 34 years of legal practice and litigation. from different companies. And 20 years ago, I was involved in a big case where we had to identify the first 105th worst contaminated water places in the whole United States. And then we had to narrow it down to 15. But actually, we found out that four of the worst contaminated water sites was right here in Michigan. So I was already primed about that. So when the news finally did trickle down to Detroit about what was going on, I actually put my shingle back up and came up here and started representing clients. In fact, I grew up with my godmother over on Lippincott and Dort Highway from the time I was 16 years old to 21. So when my family called me and said, hey, they're poisoning us, forget about retirement, I put that shingle back up, and I've been here representing people. And I'm proud to say that Melissa and Nakia, and maybe one of Jolena, one of these days, are my clients. But I think what should have happened in the national media, it should have been picked up right away. I think there was a lot of cover-up. There were people who think, well, this is not so important because these are Flint residents. These are poor people, a lot of African-American people, you know, and it wasn't important. Now, had this been in Bloomfield Hills, Farmington Hills, Livonia, Novi, or some of the more affluent places, you can believe me, there would have been national coverage. And the coverage would have continued. Every now and then, we get a little trickle here, we get a New York Times article here or there. But no, this needed to have stayed in the media all the time until everybody knew what was going on. Now, I go down to Tampa, where my other place is at, when I'm not working, and they'll say, oh, is that thing up in Flint still happening? That thing up in Flint still happening. You mean the poisoning of a whole city? That thing, is that what you're talking about? Or if I go over to Chicago, oh, is that? Are you guys still having problems over there? Well, of course we're still having problems over here in Flint because the water has not been, I don't believe it's correct. I don't think it's up to standards. And I certainly, along with my clients, would not believe anybody who tells me that it is because the very people who are now saying it's safe are the ones who lied. Okay, they lied. They covered it up. They tried to make it look like our clients were delusional or they just wanted something. And sometimes even when you see the articles in the papers and you read the comments behind it, people are like, oh, why don't these Flint people just get over it? They're just trying to hit the lottery. You know, they're just trying to better themselves better than what they were. You know, when I see some of those comments, I say, you know what, why don't you come up here and walk in their shoes? Why don't you drink some of the water? Governor Snyder, why don't you come up here and drink some of the water? And I also have to say, I was very happy that President Obama came here, but I was also very disappointed in the way he handled this situation because had he made this not a man-made disaster, but a federal disaster, we would have had immediate relief. We would have had National Guards coming in here. We would have had plumbers from all over the nation coming in, changing these pipes. Your hands up.
Can we go through all of the panelists, and we'll have Q&A. We'll have time for Q&A.
Not a Q&A, it's comment. Because under the Clean Water Act, we should have gotten bottled water within 10 days to each and every home in the city of Flint. As soon as they were notified, the water wasn't safe. And also, within a month, we should have had a water buffalo in each and every home to provide for the daily water needs for each and every home. None of that was done. If that was done under the Clean Water Act in a timely fashion, we wouldn't have had the major catastrophe we had here in Flint.
Well, what I was going to say, not only did President Obama do you guys a disservice by not making it a federal matter, which means we would have had a lot more resources coming in. When he came here and drank that glass of water and said, give me some water, we all know he was not drinking Flint water, right? We all know he was drinking bottled water, right? But had he made it a federal thing, you would have had a lot of more remunerations. You would have had things done. You would have had plumbers come in here. And then the EPA. I don't think there was enough coverage in the media about the EPA because the EPA, what does that stand for? Environmental, what does that middle initial stand for? Or Protection Agency. They failed big time. And there should have been a lot more coverage about them. The onus should have been put on them to correct the situation as well. So the media could have done a lot better job, and they should have stayed on it. I hear people saying, oh, Cynthia, aren't you Flint fatigued? No, there is no such thing as Flint fatigue. When you're living like these people in Flint have been living for 4 years, over 4 years, how could you say it's Flint fatigue? Fatigue is having to go get bottled water. Fatigue is having to open it, to wash your clothes, to wash your food, to brush your teeth.
That's not Flint fatigue. So this needs to be in the media, and it needs to stay in the media until somebody is shamed into fixing this problem once and for all. Hmm.
Dr. Reynolds?
Well, good morning. I'm also a Flint resident, senior citizen, and live with a senior citizen who will not use the water under any circumstances, even for our dog. But I have a question for the audience. How many of you all know that there's a hotel workers' strike in Chicago that's been going on since September 7th? And the issue is a fair wage and health coverage. I ask that question because have you seen it on TV? Have you seen it reported in the media? What does that have to do with Flint? Well, people think southeastern Michigan is a bunch of shop rats, black folks, Mexican Americans, and union crazies. But we know what this country needs to ensure human rights, civil rights, and environmental rights in this country. We are just poster children for this. And when you go to Arizona and you see American citizens on the Navajo reservation hauling cisterns of water for their weekly or biweekly supply, you start to realize that we're part of a big picture. And when we talk about water, the question is water a human right or is it a commodity, something that will be used to raise revenue to bail out cities or enrich corporations? For those of you who are from out of state, do you know that Pepsi-Cola pays $250 a year for a license to withdraw 400 gallons of water per minute, groundwater, in the middle of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan? However, we get our water shut off. If we're behind, we lose our property, potentially, if we're behind. Have you heard of water liens? So if you don't pay your water bills, you lose your property. And it's not just Flint. If you look in Detroit, the average arrearage for water bills was about $834. When they lost their property due to water liens, that property was sold for over $8,000, $9,000. So you see, it's a whole process of depriving people of basic necessities and property. And Michigan and Flint, Michigan is a poster child for that. And then it's not a problem, it's over, okay. Don't believe the hype about blood lead levels. They only reflect what has happened in the last 30 days. Lead stays in the brain for as long as a year. Lead stays in the long bones for decades. And when you're stressed, if you don't have enough calcium, iron, vitamin C, lead replaces that in subcellular physiology. In other words, on a cellular level. And that determines how your brain signals, that determines how your brain develops, and lead is a poison. So don't get hung up on blood lead levels. That just tells you you've been in contact most recently. And it's a population health problem. If you look at a community that has been chronically exposed to low lead levels, you will see a shift, and the IQ is only one measure and not the only valid measure, but you'll see a shift of the famous bell curve for a population to the left, which means instead of having 2.5% of the kids or people at a high needs area for educational services, you have 3.75% of the population. Whereas at the highly functional end, instead of having 2.5% at that highly functioning tail, you only have 1.25%. So it has a devastating impact on a community as far as our academic achievement, as far as behavioral issues. And if you look since 1979, there's been a correlation, and I go back to, well, actually it's dentin levels in teeth that children lose. You see a correlation between the amount of lead in the teeth and the homicide rate, the crime rate, and of course that puts people in peril with the criminal justice system. And just so you know, Freddie Gray in Baltimore was a lead-poisoned child. And so that put his life on a trajectory that led to his peril. Your health should not be determined by your zip code or your address. Your life course should not be determined by that.
I'll take the moderator's prerogative to ask the first two questions, and then we'll open up for Q&A. And I'd like to do this, start with Jelena. We were standing in the hallway the other day when a reporter from a major American newspaper came up to you and asked you, had you considered moving from Flint? I see where this is going to hit a third rail, yes. And you were very irritated by that question. And could you talk up a little bit about why you're irritated, and then for the rest of the panels that want to join in on that, as the national media came in, what questions were they asking that perhaps you wouldn't have asked? And what questions did you ask that you felt was able to gain the confidence and tell accurately the story of residents? And what questions did you see through the reportage, whether you felt that personally or you assumed it? What questions were the media, national media, asking that were patronizing, inappropriate, or downright silly?
We'll be here at 7 o'clock.
So yesterday was not the first time I've been asked, why don't I just move? We get asked that every day. Every day on Facebook, this is the national reaction on Facebook, is why don't you just move? Stop asking for free water. This new Flint fatigued, I'm really mad about that now. I didn't know that was another something I have to worry about. But the reporter asked me yesterday how I felt about, why don't I just leave? And for me, it's not just easy to just leave. I don't have money to relocate anywhere. I mean, it's not just me. I have a family of seven of us, really. I mean, there's me and my husband and his two kids and my three kids. That's a lot to try to feed, let alone move. And I just think they disregard our feelings and what we've all went through without even trying to put themselves in our shoes first before they approach us with these, well, why don't you just move? Question or statements. I mean, I don't know if you guys know what all it takes to move, but I mean, getting a U-Haul, packing your boxes all up and everything. We have kids that are in college. My husband has a barber shop here. We would have to just uproot all of that. That makes no sense when we were poisoned. We didn't do this to ourselves. They did it to us. If we don't stick around and make sure that these people are prosecuted to the fullest, they're just going to keep doing it again and again and again and again, like we're seeing, you know. And, like, they're basically about getting away with it right now. The media doesn't cover these court hearings. They're trying to shoot the trial out away from Flint residents so that we can't be there to speak out, to letting them know that we are watching what you're doing. You can't just keep doing this crap to us. And, you know, that's what I think that you guys need to focus on, too, is those the court proceedings that are happening all the time. And then we have people that are like at the hospitals. Like, we had to go and talk to a board of doctors, people who know about lead, who are very well informed about lead and most of all of its workings, I assume. People who taught me to how to take care of my children about lead. These are the same people who are trying to say that we were only exposed, not poisoned. And I don't understand why they would be trying to just disregard all of our lives like that. And they are just wanting us to poison our children every day. If we don't pay for the water and our water gets shut off, what happens next? We get Child Protective Service called on us, and they want to take our kids for not wanting to have them be exposed to poison water. It don't make no sense. And we shouldn't be forced to have to be going through that. I mean, you don't play with people's babies. Come on. I mean, it ain't just our babies. It's our older people. It's everybody in the middle. We are all being affected. You guys have been affected. Today, yesterday, all week, every time you turn the water on, every time we ate the food here or anywhere here in Flint. Mm-hmm. We have restaurants that'll say, we have Detroit water. That's offensive. I mean, you. They just do this to us all the time. And I'm tired of it. We're all tired of it.
There's a couple things I want to add about the moving. What Jolina said, I really just want to echo that if we move, they win. So, I mean, that's the thing. They want us out in the first place. That's why nothing is being done, or we're just getting piecemealed, or we have to sue just for the teeny tiny pieces that we have of, you know, getting clean water. Also, as a mother, I in good conscience could not sell my home to another family saying, look, hey, it permanently damaged my family. My kids are suffering. They're in pain. They have $900 prosthetics put in their shoes now because they're not growing right. Two of my kids. I have three. Good luck to you. Come on in. Four bedrooms, two bathrooms. You know, plumbing's busting in the walls, leaks everywhere. Water heater number four. Can't do laundry in the house. Good luck to you, new family. I can't do that to somebody else. Also, where would I move where I could trust that the water would be any better than what we've got? I'd rather stay in the disaster and the devil that we already know than go to another city, especially in the state of Michigan, under the same MDEQ that's lying to us about our water, and say, oh, well, I'm sure it's fine here, and then get exposed to another disaster. There is a lady that contacted me. She moved to Corpus Christi away from Flint 2 years ago when this busted out. She had to get away. And guess what? She's poisoned from their water crisis, what's going on right now. Right. I don't want to do that to my family. And also, you're not going to do this and get away with it. I mean, you are exactly right. There's no way. I didn't do this to my family. Why do I have to completely uproot my life? I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight. We're going to end this because that's what we do here in Flint. That's we right. fight back and we win as hard as it is. And if the media won't cover it, we just keep doing it on our own. And we will. But Why would you tell us or ask us that question? I'm not going to go move into another disaster. And if anybody is naive enough to think that this can't happen to them, you might want to wake up and get your water tested. And then on the other hand, as for the like most offensive questions, I was actually interviewed by a national media syndicate. And the reporter asked me, she said, well, Governor Snyder apologized. Isn't that good enough for you?
Oh. Wow.
The answer was no. It was a long no. It was an angry no, but it was no.
Also, they asked us, you know, well, what would it take for you to be okay with drinking the water? You know, what would it take? We've been lied to. The papers have, the data has all been erased and changed physically by somebody who's on trial now for all that.
And they make us look like we're anti-science. Well, you're not believing what they're telling you. Well, duh, they said it was safe to begin with, and y'all poisoned people and you let them die. And especially if you do follow these court cases, look at the cover-ups. Look at the people who have died, and it's not even being attributed properly. So that's why there are criminal charges, because we were lied to. So we're supposed to just suck it up, say, we're not anti, and the thing is we're not anti-science. We have asked for testing and have been turned down because we're just too needy, or we don't know what we're talking about because we don't have PhDs, or we're not water scientists. We want bacterial testing. We want other contaminants tested. Like Nakia said, it's not just lead. We know this. We are smart enough. We know how to use Google, for crying out loud. We can look this stuff up. We've been forced to because we don't have the help to cover all of these issues. So we asked for the extensive testing because we want to know how to protect our families. That's it. We want the full testing so we know how can I protect my family the best. What kind of filtration system? What do I need to do? That's it. We just want answers. But when you ask for answers, you get sued into silence.
One of the questions that I'm tired of being asked by the media is, what is it going to take for me to regain their trust? It has been over 1,600 and some days, and we're still on bottled water, so they could never get my trust. They have not fixed what was broken. Governor Snyder said that they would be supplying bottled water until all of the infrastructure was fixed, with which all of Flint's infrastructure is not fixed, and they've cut off our water. This is ridiculous what the government is getting away with. They call this pure Michigan, and we have been pure poisoned.
Right.
Thank you.
Do you think that people have been charged with involuntary manslaughter and they're still on the job, have their defense paid for by the state, interferes with your ability to regain your trust?
Absolutely.
There are also reports in the news just like a couple weeks ago that they're trying to claim that they should be the hero of it, not the person on trial.
Oh, my God.
That Eden Wells, I believe.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind.
They're still getting their six-figure salaries, and they're still in charge of our crisis and our recovery, yet they're on trial for manslaughter, for not speaking out, and for letting people die. So we're sitting here scratching our heads. But then also, so we're paying the highest water bills in the United States, 8 times national average. I paid $341 for this month of water, which is awesome. Paying for bottled water because I work, so I can't get to the help centers and I can't sit in line for 2 hours to wait for it. And then, so on top of all that wonderful stuff, don't have health insurance, have to pay for all this, you know, medical care. My prescriptions are like $270-some a month for all my health problems, whatever, all these things. But then on top of it, our tax dollars are paying for their defense. I think the amount in March was $25 million. You know how many homes would have new interior plumbing, would have new water heaters? How many people would not be shut off? Because, yes, they have systematically shut off the water in Flint. People over the winter were actually melting snow to flush their toilet. And then they come out and say, well, you guys aren't washing your hands, so now there's a hepatitis outbreak. What are we supposed to wash our hands with? You took away bottled water because you said that the water is safe, even though for many people it's not, or you haven't tested, or the, you know, it's the same people that, you know, falsified the test to begin with. But then on top of it, there's no other alternative. So how are they supposed to wash their hands? They're collecting rainwater. They're doing everything they can. I mean, this is absurd. And people are like, it's like a third world country. Wrong. If we were in a third world country, we would have all of these organizations actually coming in and helping, replacing pipes, getting us clean water, getting us filters that we can actually use, helping us out. Instead, people just assume, well, you're in the United States, the government will fix it. Ha.
When?
From your perch from the local angle, when you read national stories and perhaps other reporters even called you, any of this resonate with what you observed nationally?
Yeah, we had national media coverage, but we only have had national media coverage for the big staged events. When the Attorney General announced he's going to charge someone, we had a ballroom full of reporters. And we'll get an occasional piece where someone will come in and do something more extensive, but we're at the point now where we're struggling to do it every day, but we have 11 people who are still facing criminal charges that are active against them. So they are all going through the court process. They are going through Genesee District Court. Most of them are still there. We've had preliminary hearings that have been going on for more than a year. Most weeks, I'm in court 2 or 3 days a week with Woodson over there. And it's down to, the Detroit papers have essentially bailed on covering this story also.
Right. Yep.
The Free Press, a long time ago, they initially were sending people here to try and cover this because there's a lot about how this happened and how it was allowed to happen that we still don't know. Or I don't feel like I know it to the extent that I'm going to say, yes, we know it as a fact. We may suspect a lot of it, and some of it's proven out by the documents, but you've still got 11 cases that are in the very early stages where there is some criminal culpability that's being charged with these people. And on most days, it's a reporter from MERS, which is a subscription news service. It's a camera guy from Channel 25, which is a local station. and it's me, and some citizens will be there too. The citizens are there more than the media are. It is not a compelling process to cover, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's a lot of sitting there while 15 attorneys for four defendants and five prosecutors are fighting over documents and what's going to be admitted into evidence. It is a time-consuming and a slow thing to cover.
Ron, can we be real specific about the legal costs? The state of Michigan has spent $27 million in the defense and prosecution of these 15 individuals.
Yes. And they're paying for expert witnesses to come in and verify their stories.
The That's entire not included in that legal number. Defender budget, public defender budget, for Genesee County in 2017 was $25 million. So you see, it's not just the water. It is a program of corporations taking over state government. It's exploiting the environment for the benefit of corporations. And democratic rights have pretty much been kicked out the window. And then you look at our status. We are in debt. How can a city that was in debt finance a pipeline? And, you know, Ron talked about things we don't know and we'll never know. Why did the county drain commissioner become a confidential informant against a publicist, Sam Riddle? Usually if you're involved with the FBI, there's a problem. So we don't know what's going on. We hear about there's a federal fraud investigation, and it's reported in the Free Press 6 months ago, and then everything shuts down. But we really do not know the extent of the fraud, the criminal activity, and the environmental injustice under which we have lived in Flint, in Detroit, in Benton Harbor, the nine cities that have been under emergency managers. And we live in a state where our schools have been under emergency managers. So we go to court, complaint to the ACLU goes to court to say that schools should guarantee literacy for their students. And the court says no, the state is only responsible to finance education. They're not responsible for outcomes. But yet they deprive school districts of funds based on outcomes. So I'm confused. And then our children are exposed to a multitude of environmental contaminants that affect growth, development, and cognition. And it's our problem because we're irresponsible, because we choose to live in this community. It's bad parenting. So, you know, it's coming to a town near you, too, also.
You know, I just want to highlight something that was just mentioned. In terms of the money that's being spent by the state, how schizophrenic it is. On the one hand, you have the state paying to prosecute these people who are accused of crimes that are still on the job, still getting paid. On the other hand, along with paying for the defense of these accused criminals, the state is also paying to fight against the class action lawsuits that the residents are bringing. So they're, on the one hand, they're saying these people poisoned and covered up and lied and cheated. On the other hand, they are doing everything they can, pulling every trick in the book to slow down the whole civil action process, that people are just trying to get some sort of compensation, and they'll never, ever, ever be able to be compensated for having miscarriages induced. There was one study that estimated maybe as almost 300 women had stillbirths and miscarriages. They used to give people lead pellets back in the 1700s to induce abortions. That's what lead does to you. And it's not just the lead. It's the Legionnaire's disease that killed at least 11 people and probably way many more, because they knew that there was a spike in Legionnaire's disease after the switch to the river, and they never reported it. They never set out the alarm. And because they didn't send out the alarm people were being misdiagnosed. They were coming in and being diagnosed with pneumonia when they really had Legionnaire's disease. Yeah. And you look, and there was a big spike in pneumonia cases and pneumonia deaths in the same period that the Legionnaire's outbreak was occurring. And these aren't just, oh, this might have happened. This happened, and they knew it, and they didn't. Just like they knew the lead levels were elevated and covered it up, they knew that these spikes in Legionnaire's deaths occurred. And now we know the miscarriages as well. So it's more than just the lead that was the tragedy. And just one other quick thing about what's being missed is Flint is the there cannot be a more clear example of the failure of austerity economic policies than Flint. These emergency managers had one job. That was to come in and make sure that the no interest payment, no bond payment was ever missed. They had all these extraordinary powers that they could do just about anything they wanted. The only thing that the law said they couldn't do was miss a bond payment. And so they came in and cut and cut and cut. And it was not the Flint City Council that decided to use the river. It was the appointing emergency manager that made the decision to use the river, saying that they're going to save $5 million over a two-year period. That $5 million is going to be a rounding error by the time all these costs associated with this man-made, totally avoidable disaster will come in. And it shows, you know, they came in and said, oh, we want to run government like a business. Well, they succeeded. Just like there was a massive oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico because the corporate bottom line led to cost cutting, the people of Flint were poisoned because of the cost cutting in enforced austerity measures put on them. You know, 5 months into the crisis, the GM plant said, Jesus, our engines are rusting. Before we get it out of the plant, we got to go back to Detroit. Right. The emergency manager, even though it cost the city of Flint a lot of money, allowed the special dispensation for GM to get off of the Flint water and get back to the Detroit system. Yet in March, almost a year after the crisis began, when the city council of Flint voted to return to the Detroit system, the emergency manager said, no, I'm not going to let you. That's ridiculous. First of all, you don't have the money, and besides, the water is just fine. So essentially, shut up and keep drinking it.
Attorney Lindsay?
Yes. There's one thing I just want to add. Kurt is an amazing example of what media should do.
Yes.
Kurt came to some of our protests, met with us, and then went with us to our homes and actually looked through the files because we had to become our own media. I mean, JoJo is, Jolina is. What are you fighting for? The only reason What Are You Fighting For was formed is my husband and I were like, nobody's talking about this. So we use it as a portal for accurate information for residents as well as people outside to see what's actually happening to us because nobody was listening to us. So Kurt actually sat down in our homes, talked to us as human beings, as actual on-the-ground experts, and went through the data that we had already collected and went through our experiences. He went door-to-door with us to help us test water. He FOIA'd, used his money to make sure we got all the information we possibly could and helped expose this crisis, what was actually happening.
And
so that's the thing.
He
did. He was out front with us. He gave us the respect, never treated us like we were crazy or that we were stupid or we were making it up. Actually listened to what we had, read what we had, and used it and exposed it to the world. So what Kurt did and is still doing, because he's helping us with the shutoffs and trying to get answers to help us fight back, is amazing. So we can't thank you enough, Kurt. Thank you for being the way that you are.
Can we return to the hepatitis A outbreak that was declared in Michigan in October 2017, where the governor mobilized our emergency response center, and there's another emergency response center that was activated and, as far as I know, has yet to be recalled. But what they don't connect is that in 2016, over 44,000 households in Detroit were shut off of water. So why, in the midst of a regional hepatitis A outbreak, are we shutting off water when we're always telling our kids, wash your hands after you go to the bathroom?
Right.
And so they do this risk profile where they say, well, it's a problem of homeless, IV, drug abusers. Boy, is this starting to sound familiar, like during the HIV AIDS epidemic? So, you know, they say these are the high-risk populations, but if you live in a house without water, isn't that close to being a transient housing situation? And so it elevates you to high risk, but we still are shutting off water. So when you bring this up to the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, they tell me, well, Larry, you know, the hepatitis A outbreak is actually tailing off. But now in 2018, in Flint, we have increased the water shutoff to the tune of 300 households a month and maybe 150, a week. And 150 per week get turned back on, but we are still in a hepatitis A outbreak. So the question is access to safe, affordable water, is it a service or is it a human right? And when are we going to start talking about a basic human needs water service where you get water service regardless? 26% of the water that a household uses is for toileting. And then you go beyond that. If you can't wash your dishes, you can't wash your clothes, you can't wash your hands, that's like going to a gas station and lighting a cigarette while you pump gas. Mm-hmm. And what you say is, oh, well, there's been no explosion or fire the last 10 times I did it, but you're playing with trouble.
Yeah. One last journalism question for me, and then we'll go to the floor. One thing that was very glaring in, I did for my paper, a pretty complete Nexus search of every national article done on the Flint water crisis. Not a single African American figure in the crisis was described as a hero,
right,
in literal words. The only people that were called a hero in the national coverage were Mark Edwards, Dr. Mona, and Leanne Walters. The British Independent did a feature where they called an African-American figure a hero. Progressive magazines such as In These Times and Mother Jones did big features where they, in their list of heroes, included at least one African-American figure. What does or doesn't it mean for this a story of this magnitude in a city that the struggle was multicultural, where yet at the end of the day, in terms of the national images, and I think without any detail, we know who's won the international and national awards, some with big money. What does it matter that no African American figure of Flint was ever called a hero in the national media?
If I can answer that, I'm accountable to my friends and my neighbors. I am not accountable to the media. I am not accountable to state government. And if I got to face Tony and haven't done what I'm supposed to do, he'll let me know. So, and that is the basis of our success here in Michigan, in Flint, Michigan. We have a network, and it's not always a formal organization, but if you ask anybody down this row, at least once or twice a month, including our local journalists, one of us is talking to the other. So national or international attention, that's not our issue. Our issue is our future. Our issue is human rights, civil rights, and environmental justice. And I think I summed it up accurately, but go ahead.
No, and two, my issue, one of the things I've always said is that, one, we're not fixed, so there's no heroes. There's no heroes until we are all, every single resident in Flint, are safe. Another part is, who defines a hero? Who defines a hero? What they should be looking at is the undocumented community, which nobody bothers to talk to. They're completely ignored. And the little grassroots organizations that are making sure these people are safe from ICE, that have bottled water, that are safe. I mean, San Juan Oliveras, look at what she does every day, but nobody talks to her. Nayara Sharif, look at Nakia. I mean, Angelina, look at these people who are out here every day taking care of their neighbors, and nobody's talking to them. Nobody's calling them heroes. And so, Juan, first of all, heroes are the people that live in Flint every single day and survive, wake up the next morning to continue fighting and taking care of each other. The poor and poisoned are the heroes. Number two, the heroes that have been, they don't live in Flint. They're not going through this like we are, so they don't have the same view we do. They're not waking up in it 24/7 like we are. So when you go to the heroes and ask them questions, they're not going to be able to give you the perspective that the actual heroes, the actual residents who live here can give you. That's going to give you the better picture. But then also, I mean, if you just listen to us, we know what we're talking about, and we know what we need the most. And so the fact that we are taking care of each other, that's, I mean, you guys are heroes. You guys are like the everyday fighting heroes. And I think that the hero narrative needs to be changed, because, and Kurt's right, everybody, the media likes a nice little perfectly packaged, you know, smiling hero bunch, but there's no heroes. It's not done. We're still fighting. We still need this to be out there and exposed. And the regular residents who are fighting will be able to inspire the other cities who are fighting, because if they don't have a Mark, Mona, or Leanne, they feel helpless. That's what we hear when they reach, these other cities reach out to us. Well, we don't have a Mark Edwards. We don't have this and this. You know, we don't have heroes. And I have to tell them, you are the hero because you're speaking up. You know something's wrong. So hold that confidence and fight as hard as you can. So that is it's a damaging thing to actually label heroes. And that the heroes are labeled that are not permanent residents here and who do not represent us, because we are a very diverse city. A very diversity, and Kurt's right, people that we never would have talked to. Nayara and I have lived 2 minutes from each other for years and never met until this happened. And I think that's amazing. I had, there's activists from Cleveland that say, how do you cross the racial divide? How did you guys do it? Well, we have to do it because we are fighting for our very lives. So I think that needs to be the hero story that's out there, if any.
We have time for a few minutes of questions. Come to the mic and ask your question. The mic is right there. We have about 5 minutes. The normal rule is SCJ members go first, and journalists who want to ask a question for any journalists that want to ask or SCJ members. Yes. You want to go to the mic?
And if you want to hear me, I may need to tilt this down. So what we've been hearing, us journalists here in... Oh, I'm Madeline Bowden. I'm a freelance writer. What we've been hearing here in Flint is that our standard practices of journalism did not work for this story. And we have on the panel, news reporter, feature reporter, and as a feature reporter, I'm always superior. What the news guys missed, I'll get. But it sounds like that didn't work either. So what are our new practices so we don't make these mistakes again? Especially because, you know, we pick a single protagonist because a million people is a statistic. You know, one death is a tragedy. How do we redo that so it works?
Well, I mean, part of it is you just have to make the conscious effort because what's your job, our job as journalists is to, as accurately as possible, portray the story. And the story of Flint is, has been stated over and over again, how it was not just these heroes, that it was the driving force was the residents that were shouting and marching and showing up at meetings, waving, you know, jugs of brown water. But they took it upon themselves to uncover these facts, to make their own media. We made a documentary, and a ton of that footage in that documentary that we made was from Melissa. So doing your job and accurately portraying it and not laying it all on one person. You know, I understand the need to have a clean narrative, but you know what? A clean narrative isn't really the truth. It's a messy narrative, and it involves a lot of things. So if you want to do your job, it is, you know, convincing your editor, no, it's not this one person that's the focus. This is the focus. Another thing that needs to be addressed, and we're not talking about very much in this meeting, is racism, right? Racism and classism at the core of this whole thing in a lot of different ways. There's the historic racism that caused Flint and Detroit to be in the economic dire straits that they found them in. How often do you see that referred to? There is the active racism that the Michigan Coalition on Human Rights issued a report that talked about all the different ways that racism were a factor. And it keeps coming, and they identified the emergency manager law as part of this. Dr. Reynolds and his team that was appointed by the governor identified the emergency manager law as being a prime factor in the creation of this crisis. And you know what? That law, zero has been done to change that law, which everybody admits was a culprit in this, and zero has been done. Again, how are you supposed to trust a government where the governor's own people said this is a major cause of this crisis and zero is done to change the law that everybody agrees was a
70%
central part of
the
crisis?
Minority population was covered by the emergency manager law for the city or the schools, whereas 2% of the white population was covered
in the state.
And then on a statewide level, how many of you realize that all of Michigan is within the 100-mile ICE enforcement jurisdiction? So if you've noticed, we talk about friends and neighbors. We don't use the word citizens that often because that's who they are, our neighbors and residents, because we have to be very careful what we do with ICE. If we say we're reaching out to a specific community, that just means ICE, come on down. And the state police, I don't mean to sound paranoid, but you should know that they monitor social media. So when you try to attract folks and do outreach, you have to be very careful because you may put them in hazard.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Ebbs. I work for ABC News in Washington. You know, I haven't been there very long. I can't speak to our coverage in 2014 or anything. But I was struck by your comments about the questions that, you know, as a national reporter coming in, unfortunately from my perspective as an individual, that kind of formula isn't going to go away anytime soon. So this will be happening in other communities. And I was just curious, when those reporters approach you with obviously a lot less knowledge about the community as Kurt has, you know, is there something that they, in your perspective, should have done to kind of convey that maybe they are legitimately interested in understanding your very real perspective from those questions, but, you know, approaching it in a way that's a lot more sensitive to your situation? Thanks.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would appreciate if someone approached me just like any other friend or family member who wanted to hear my story truly and for what it was. I mean, you just do what you do naturally with your friends.
And I would say don't come in with the bias of we're going to ask this resident about their rashes and about if they want to move, and then we're going to ask an expert to, you know, give us the actual facts and validate what this person was saying about their rashes, but make us look crazy, emotional, crying, whatever. Talk to us like an expert. Talk to us with respect for what we're going through, and don't just say, well, look at this sad African-American person who is poor and can't afford this and that. Ask them about the water. The one thing that we started doing with Flint Rising, we started canvassing, going door to door in 2016, at the beginning of 2016. And what we found is if you go in and talk to the residents, one of my favorite stories to tell is I walked in and there was a table of five ladies in their 70s or older talking about water chemistry, talking about chlorine levels, talking about the damage copper actually can do. And it's not just lead. That is one of the most amazing things that you can actually see. Not just sitting here saying, well, I'm poor, I can't do this. I mean, that is a part of it. But, oh my God, listen to people and the things that we have learned, because I think then it'll encourage these other communities to be like, we can learn that too. I don't have a PhD, and instead of being scared of the science, I'm going to jump right in and learn what I can. I'm going to ask questions, and we have to become our own experts, because we have learned that you can't always rely on somebody to come in and help you out and not have their own agendas or whatever. And when they leave, just like when the media left, it seems like it's all over. So talk to the residents the same way that you would talk to an expert. And if they don't have the answers, I'm sure they'll point you to somebody who does. But at least you'll get to see the amazing intelligence and expertise that that is in a majority-minority poorest city in America. It is amazing.
And a lot of the credentialed experts were wrong about Flint.
Okay, we're at 12:02, and we're supposed to have a hard stop. So please make your last questions brief. And yes.
Okay. My name is Mark Schlefstein. I'm with the Times-Picayune from New Orleans. We're a sister paper of Ron's media outlet. What I want to know from Ron and from Kurt both is, how has the meltdown of print media that you guys have gone through locally and nationally, how much has that affected the way that coverage has occurred here?
I can tell you just from our shop. Probably similar to yours. We've got a lot less muscle and resources than we used to. So we pick our fights where, and we try and utilize it the best we can. But it is something that, from trying to cover this from the duration, is something that you don't get assigned. It's something that you have to continue to advocate for. These stories that I do, sometimes they're very slight turn of the screw. I may have found a new letter or a new document that I think people should know about. So I'll write about it, but I might get 2,000 people looking at a story like that that's important to the overall story, whereas if there's any garden variety issue of crime that happens...
Or the president's newest girlfriend.
Anything. Flint water stories, there's a very small window of people that cover them, that follow it, so... It's not like at the end of the day I can say, wow, I brought 10,000 readers to come and look at this story about Flint water, and the guy next to me has just written about an Easter egg hunt, and he's done five times what I've done. So that's a real, real thing. So you just have to continue to advocate to be able to do it as much as.
Just as Ron or just as Kurt has been wonderful to the community, and we thank him for all the help and what he's done. The same thing with Ron. We really look to his articles to get our own information. And I can't thank you enough, Ron, for, you know, that's where I go to find out the court information, and us at the Democracy Defense League, we get a lot of heads up from you. So you've been invaluable in the team at all this whole time.
Okay. Sir?
Tom Haley from the Sierra Club. The things I like about these two books are Dr. Molna talks about Father Coughlin. Anna Clark talks about the Tea Party. Hey. What about the Coughlins in the Tea Party? You want to blame government. There's a lot more that goes on than just government. You got to win elections.
That's right.
I want to add something real quick. If anybody wants to get a start on some good blunt reporting, Tony Palladino has some amazing information right there. Flint resident, check that out.
Whoa. Just real quick, I've been told to keep it short. I want to thank the moderator because I'll carry on. That's kind of why I'm not up there. Just so you all know, there's nine different This is the loss of hair. Things that we've been fighting going on. The media hasn't covered. So I'm going to ask two things. I just came up with this the other day to speak for this gentleman. WWFD. Ask yourself, as journalists, what would Flint do? Because we got a poster child. I mean, I had teeth missing. I lost my hair. Relationship. I got a granddaughter who's angry all the time, having trouble in school. She's 11 years old, but they're not doing nothing for anybody, 7 and above.
Right.
This disaster started when she was 7. She's 11 now. I'm older with diabetes and I'm infected, very much so. My relationship with my wife for 37 years is not great. I don't know if you guys know that, but what would Flint do? What's better? Let's do this. WWJP, what would the journalists do? You guys are a story. I said this to the civil rights. You guys are our only voice. You're our last out. Well, they're not. You guys across this world are. I thank you all and the moderator that brought you all here to the city of Flint. We're badass. I'll be with you. They asked us, why don't you leave? You think I'm leaving this?
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? You think I'm going to leave these warriors? And the other thing, I had the CDC in my hideout, my little cabin up north that I could never really afford. They're knocking on my door up north because when you guys get on that bus trip to go up here, realize you've got military bases that are dumping pollution into these rivers too.
Yes.
The CDC come knocking on my cabin. What would the Germans do? Thank you.
All right.
I'll be very short. I really thank you all for your voices and all that. You keep my blood going because the leg, you know, when it affects you, then you have to keep moving, you know, even when you can't move. So you keep me excited. I'm making it short. I would love to see all y'all next year at the United Nations. I am, you know, pop this up as a live feed. We're going there. They can't stop us. You just can't kill people and get away with it, especially in America. Exactly. They've committed genocide against us, and the whole world's about to know it. I appreciate you all, and I'm just letting you know, but I'll be contacting her so I can get permission to put it up there.
All right. We want to thank all the speakers, in particular, Jelena, Melissa, and Nakia. And Cynthia, did you have one last? You were quiet for a while. Just you get the very last word.
Thank you. I have one last thing I want to say. Judge Greg Mathis, I'm sure everybody knows who that is on TV. He's behind this all the way, and we're going to plan a caravan from Detroit, Michigan, all the way up to the governor's house, if that's where he's going to be, or to the Lansing. We're going to put some onus on him. So we're going to put some strength behind him. He needs to be accountable for what he's done to the people of Flint. How do you testify at a congressional hearing that I did wrong, I'm the head guy, I'm going to fix it, and 4.5 years later, these people are still suffering?
Thank you.
And the question everybody asked me a lot, and I don't mind them asking me, they asked me, Ms. Lindsay, why are the attorneys involved? What do you intend to accomplish? My question is simple. I'm going to get as much as I can to compensate our clients because they have been poisoned, they have suffered, they're continuing to suffer, and there's no amount of money that can compensate them, but we're going to do the best we can. We want their hot waters replaced, we want their fixtures replaced, we want their properties values back up, we want them compensated for everything they've gone through, we want money in the bank for the future medicals. That's why the lawyers are here. We're going to hold somebody accountable. Somebody's going to pay.
Thank you.